Welcome to the Weekly Insight Podcast, where we break down the noise of the week and help you understand the psychology of the markets with your host, Andrew Doerr at Insight Wealth Group.
Good morning. Welcome to the latest edition of the Weekly Insight Podcast. As usual, I am your host, Andrew Doerr. I appreciate you spending some time with us this week. Before we dive in, I'll just say what I say every week and remind you that what you're about to hear today should not be construed as individual investment advice, but more importantly, our thoughts on what's going on with the market and the economy. If you'd like to have a discussion about how this ties into your personal portfolio, we would love to have a conversation with you. So with that, let's dive in. Last week was spring break for many, especially those of us here in the Midwest. Families were traveling far and wide looking for a bit of relaxation. Mine was one of them as well. And we were on a ski trip. And one of the people that we were with had a little fall and suffered a knee injury. And while they still are waiting on a final diagnosis, they described their knee as feeling loose. It was an unsettling feeling for them. I would also say it's how we might describe the market and the economy right now. Things feel loose. There is a lot going on. There are a substantial number of unknowns, things that are making us feel unstable right now. The inflation battle is continuing. We have a Fed meeting on the horizon this week. Bank failures were leading headlines last week. There's a former president who is calling for protests in the streets upon what will likely be his indictment later this week. The head of a nuclear superpower was charged as a war criminal. Pick your poison. I guarantee that there is something out there that can make you feel scared and or pessimistic about where things are going. You would not be human if you weren't feeling that way right now. You know, when we founded our firm 11 years ago, there were a few basic assumptions that we wanted to make about asset management, about how we would do this business. And one of the most important ones really rings true in times like this. And that was that we had to understand, we had to avoid getting cocky. We had to know that we could not see around corners. We have no omniscient powers that allow us to see the future. And anytime a financial advisor or an economist begins to think that they can, that's when things get out of control. And so instead, we have to work to manage our risk to ensure that in good times and in bad, we're able to manage expectations, to be able to ensure that the bottom doesn't fall out from underneath us. And so in a time when the market felt like it was falling out from underneath us 3 years ago, we started writing our weekly insight memos, which turned into this podcast. And when I started writing those memos to communicate to our clients at that time, it was largely because no one wanted to see us face-to-face back then. No one wanted to interact with other people, and so we really had to work to get the word out on what was going on. And so I actually, in the midst of this last week, I started looking back at old memos. And it's interesting, because it was 3 years ago this week that was absolutely one of the most stressful moments of the pandemic. This was the week 3 years ago that governments started shutting down businesses. This is when New York State closed. This is when President Trump talked about 14 days to slow the curve. This is when schools were closing. This is also when Congress and the Trump administration were in the midst of agreeing upon the first round of stimulus. But what most people don't remember is that it was also 3 years ago this week that the market bottomed from the COVID scare. That is a critical point because it reminds us that markets are forward-looking. By 3 years ago today, the market was already down over 30%. That was before the worst of the jobs reports or the results of the economy shutting down were known or kids were sent home from school. And so when I look back, I found our memo from 3 years ago this week. And in it, I wrote something that basically said that while this is a painful process, it also presents significant opportunities. And I noted that we were starting to see stocks well below their fair market value. Small cap, mid cap, international stocks, even large cap were well below their historical norms. The difficulty, as I said at that time, was understanding when to buy because, as I noted, there's no perfect answer and we would probably be wrong on the timing. But at the time, I noted that we were starting to deploy dry powder. What we had no idea of that day when we sent that memo out was that that day would be the bottom of the market. No one did. But we did know that valuations made sense and that we had faith in the underpinnings of capitalism. Thankfully, our investors stuck with us through that time. And the last 3 years, despite the pain of this recent inflationary period we've been through, the results have been positive. So what does that mean for us today? Let's dive into it and how it relates to the things that we're facing in this moment. The first has to be the conversation of the banking industry. And there's a question, are we facing a banking crisis or a bank-specific problem? And let's be clear, the last 2 weeks have definitely exposed problems in the banking sector. Despite the fact that regulators have taken a much firmer stance on capitalization, two very large banks have failed, and two other very large banks had to be bailed out. Just this weekend, it was announced that UBS was going to buy Credit Suisse at a significant discount to ensure confidence in the market. That is certainly leading many of us to have flashbacks to late 2007 and 2008. 15 years ago, when we were cutting our teeth in this industry, we faced similar conversations. But there is a big difference between where we are today and where we were in 2008. First of all, and I think the most obvious to everyone, is that credit quality is significantly better than it was back then. Banks have not been giving out the subprime debt that caused so many problems 15 years ago, and borrowers have been smarter as well. That's why defaults are at historically low levels. People took advantage of very low interest rates during the pandemic to lock in home mortgages, car debt, et cetera, and make sure they weren't going to face such problems as they had in 2008. Corporations are acting much differently today as well. Back in 2007, this is really interesting, 54% of corporate debt was floating rate. And so when rates began to rise in 2007, corporations had problems. They were on the wrong side of the trade. But today, just 9.8% of S&P 500 corporate debt is floating rate. 78% is long-term fixed rate debt. An additional 12.3% is short-term fixed rate debt. So over 90% of debt for S&P 500 corporations right now is fixed interest debt. Secondly, banks are much better capitalized than they were heading into 2008. I am the first one, you guys have certainly heard me do it, complaining about government overreach. But the Dodd-Frank banking regulations, irony here that one of Barney Frank's banks was the ones that went under this week, but those banking regulations made sure the big banks were well positioned for this environment. Today, they are even better capitalized than they were as we entered the pandemic. So I'm then comfortable saying that this is a bank-specific problem, not a systemic one. That doesn't mean that in these times of higher interest rates, there won't be more problems for other banks. Banks that have not managed their investment portfolio well may suffer. That is exactly what happened to Silicon Valley Bank. That is exactly what happened to Signature Bank. But there is not a risk today of the banking system collapsing. So then that gets us to the Fed meeting this week. Wednesday is going to be a really big day in this whole conversation, as the Fed will publicly weigh in for the first time. This whole last week and a half has happened in a very unique time period in which the Fed does not allow comments by Fed governors for the 10 days leading up to a Fed meeting. Their silence leaves a lot of unanswered questions. Public perception has not changed much since I wrote our last memo last week. Right now, the idea of a 50 basis point rate hike has disappeared. The market is split between a 25 basis point hike and no hike at all. But then there was the European Central Bank last week. They shocked markets when they raised rates by 50 basis points, despite all the news that was coming out about banks, specifically Credit Suisse. Their argument was that killing inflation was more important than easing financial conditions. Is the Fed going to have the same approach? I don't know. You know, it was announced last week that inflation fell as much as expected in February, but that number wasn't particularly great. We're currently at 5.5% core CPI and 6% for all items CPI. But there was other data last week that was quite good. The producer's price index, so when we talk about CPI, we're talking about the consumer's price index. The producer's price index, which is kind of one step up the value chain, dropped much more than expected. The year-over-year number fell from 5.7% in January to 4.6% in February. The month-over-month number for PPI was negative. It was negative 0.1%. So now the Fed has a choice to make. Do they stay aggressive to kill inflation, or do they slow down to benefit the economy? There are really good arguments for both paths, and I think that both paths have risks. It is a crossroads that I simply and my firm cannot predict. But we can come back to our thinking from 3 years ago. Because much like that time, while there is undoubtedly less risk in the world today than there was then, there is risk, but I would argue there's still opportunity. Valuations remain very good in this market. If you remove the big six names, the fan mags, if you will, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, if you remove those names from the S&P, the S&P 494 is trading at 16.7 times earnings. That is just a smidge higher than the long-term historical average of 16.5 times earnings and well below the 10-year average of 17.5 times earnings. And when you go down the ladder from there and you look at value stocks and mid-cap stocks and small-cap stocks, the situation is even better. The valuations are significantly better. So opportunities exist. So much like 3 years ago, we chose last week not to sit on our hands. We eased more capital into bank stocks last week. The timing won't be perfect, but we are really comfortable with where we were able to buy those positions at for the long term. But I'll close with this. It is not a time to be reckless. Things certainly are loose. We have to be flexible. But it's really important to remember that this is a much less scary time than March of 2020. And much like then, those that keep their heads in this environment are going to be able to capitalize. So with that, we'll leave it there for this week. As always, if you have any questions, give us a call, 515-273-1333, or you can visit us on the web at www.insightwealthgroup.com. I hope you have a fantastic week. Take care.
Securities offered through Arete Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, NFA. Investment advisory services offered through Arete Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment firm.